The 11th, the 10th area is in relation to staff question back up earlier. At one point this year, Mr. Granato met with the Division of, Mr. Granato from the Division of Social Services met with the Alaska Chapter of National Association of Social Workers, and we discussed and offered again to discuss with him some questions around staff and the use of staff. And he suggested to us some figures, which I don't have, but that concerned us somewhat in the number of what he referred to as direct service staff. And I think, Representative Meekins, you spoke to that a bit earlier in relation to staff which have been moved to administrative mm-hmm. positions rather than from, apparently, I think that's what he was referring to, from direct service positions. We're going to try to ferret out some of these questions again around positions that are direct service positions, and we were going to ask your attention to that area already. I just came to it on my list, but I think you already addressed it. The 11th area about which we are concerned is the whole issue of daycare. Dr. Byrne brought that issue to your attention a little while ago. We too are concerned about it. As you're aware, the legislature last year provided for the option of local governments to pick up the whole issue of daycare licensing. We've been concerned for a couple of years in relation to the fact that daycare services are provided out of both the Division of Social Services and out of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. There is a substantial amount of money in the Community and Regional Affairs budget for daycare services. That money funds what you're familiar with as the Daycare Assistance Program, which was passed by the legislature a couple of years ago. We're a bit confused as to how those two programs relate, and if they are not duplicating each other, or if indeed, even together, they are not providing the funds to meet the needs that exist for daycare. That's a tremendous need in the state of Alaska.
May I interject a moment?
Yes, Representative.
I worked for Community and Regional Affairs. We were having the same problem. I think it's interesting to note at this point that all of the daycare assistance funds, except the required AFDC funds, are gone.
Yes.
At this point?
At this point.
But again, you see, we would want to look at where are the AFDC funds for daycare? In which BRU, how many, what are the administrative regulations that facilitate the connection of that money to
right.
the CRA program. Then you see, so it looks as though there are daycare funds in at least three BRUs. The one in child assistance, I think they call it, in community and regional affairs. In the program services component of social services, and then somewhere in the AFDC, I would assume in the BRUs for public assistance, there's additional daycare money. But, you know, and somehow that ought to be looked at in some sort of unified fashion, and then also some determinant of it being a need. So we, again, intend to look at that one, and we'll hope to have some more recommendations for you in the future. The 12th area is in relation to alcoholism, and that seems to be, yes, a major area of concern. As I referred to earlier, our statewide organization has been concerned about the effectiveness of the money that has been spent. We're hearing a lot this year about increase the amount of money that's spent on alcoholism, expand the programs, the governor's proposed the tax funds for which will go to support the alcoholism program. We have some question about the effectiveness of the money that has already been spent in the state, and it is substantial. Now, not a lot of it, however, is general fund money. Much of it is federal funds in alcoholism. We would direct your attention to the fact, however, that alcoholism is a symptom. Alcoholism is really only a symptom. We have said this again, year after year after year after year. If alcoholism programs treat only the symptom, we're never going to make any substantial impact upon alcoholism. Alcoholism is the symptom of family dysfunction, of inadequate services to families early on when problems come along, to it's a symptom of a lack of available in the community recreation opportunities, coordinated health services, from divorce counseling to daycare to childcare. We really ask that it be viewed as a problem, as a symptom of much larger social problems. If I can, for the moment, just give you an example. As a private citizen, I attended the Growth Policy Council for Karen Akers. And when we came to the what do you see as the major needs in human services, I was one of the people that put other on that particular list that you had referred to earlier, particularly because I see that we are not meeting as a state our basic social service needs. For instance, we have people in the state who are hungry, literally hungry. AFDC payments are totally inadequate. How can a mother and one child have on $300 a month in the state of Alaska that has the highest cost of living in any state? See, I contend that until we begin to look at the basic way we meet human needs in the state, all of the rest of this is not exactly irrelevant, but to me is minimized and important. That's just a private editorial comment, excuse me, but I really do see those as basic human needs that really aren't being adequately met in the state. My other question in relation to the Governor's Growth Policy Council questionnaire is, when he asked me about human needs, I wasn't quite sure how to respond when he put education under human needs. Education is a separate department, and I think needs to be looked at. Its funding devices are separate from health and social services. Therefore, I think to say that it's not the top two or three when people respond to human needs is a bit misleading, since it is not seen as a program or service out of the Department of Health and Social Services. It's another entire department. So to me, then, when you remove that from human needs, then I think we ought to look at some other kinds of things. We direct your attention to the fact that we will be again studying, as we have in years past, the general relief budget in the Division of Public Assistance. That's another facet of a concern we have had for several years. We call your attention to the fact that funds have lapsed from the general relief appropriation, at least for the last 2 years that I know of. We were told at a meeting that virtually half of their appropriation this year had lapsed for lack of use. We find that impossible to believe when people in this state are hungry, when they go to Mary Townshevitz and can't get assistance, when someone's dying in the family with catastrophic health care, and yet general relief funds lapse in the state.
Where have you heard that from?
Senator Croft said that information was presented to the Budget and Audit Committee.
We get monthly reports on what portion of allocations have been spent, so that we can make, you know, during this point in this year, we can see what they're doing with the money they had last year, and we can check that out.
Yeah, we direct your attention to that, since we're very concerned that, you know, that's the pile of money that's supposed to be available to meet needs for everybody who falls through the cracks of all the other kinds
pick
of
up
programs.
Miscellaneous ones that don't fill in the other programs, right?
Okay. I think already the other things I would mention have been mentioned. We too are concerned about the numbers of children placed out of state in the state of Alaska, mm-hmm. and the amount and costs. Again, particularly since, as Mr. Garvin has made you aware, the state of Alaska has never fully implemented Alaska Statute 4740 purchase of care.
Mm-hmm.
Those costs have never been fully met. If they were, perhaps institutions in the state of Alaska would be more apt to be able to meet the needs of kids who are being sent out. So these are areas we'll be specifically directing our attention to. There will be others as well in the whole area of public assistance, which again, I didn't have quite enough time to go into.
Well, we certainly welcome your not only your comments here, but in the future before we, as we consider this budget, and anyone else that's here too. We don't claim to be experts, but we are interested in finding some information to make these decisions on more than what is presented to us by the agencies, and because they can just give us selective information, and we never feel like we have enough. At least we need the chance of having the ideas fight it out in the marketplace, sort of. We certainly appreciate that. I'm wondering if have you worked before with the short forms? You know what I mean by the short forms?
We've worked with both the written and the short forms.
And would you need information? I could make available to you and anyone else who wants it, information in the red books if you need it. And if that's what you'd like, can you give you both?
We found in the past that without the information in the red book, we've been much hampered in making concrete.
The only problem with the red book is finding out how to use it. Once you've got it down, there is a lot of information in there.
We've within our organization had a little in-service training about.
Have you?
We'll
certainly make that. If you're requesting that, we will do it.
Okay.
And if there's anyone else who would like that information, we can do that too. Representative Smith.
I have a couple of questions. I was a second-hand listener to a conversation about a lady who had been receiving or asked for supplemental income. She had a job and children. And she figured out how she could, with the money that she had coming in, and she had some child support from an ex-husband, and she figured it all up, and she was still about $200 short of her immediate expenses. And when she went through the turnstiles, she came out going completely on welfare and coming out ahead because she couldn't get supplementary assistance. Is this really the case?
Well, what, without knowing any more information, what it sounds like is that she has had gone in for general relief assistance to help. General relief assistance is a one-time only payment. It does not go month after month after month after month. Right? And there's a statutory maximum of $80 per person that can be paid under general relief funds. There's been a great deal of discussion in our organization the past couple of years as to whether or not we should come and ask the legislature to increase the statutory maximum from $80 per person higher. But we've been reluctant to do that when we find that time after time after time, existing appropriations lapse. So, yeah. You see, she could have perhaps qualified on a one-time only basis for some general relief, but even that wouldn't have helped her regularly month after month. Now, the other reason in which she might have, without knowing the facts, been eligible for AFDC would have been, you see, because that child support then is turned over to the department and would offset the AFDC expenditure for that particular lady, so that while she would receive $300 a month perhaps from the families with dependent children, the state would be reimbursed actually whatever her ex-husband was paying in child support. So you have to look at that. That can be very misleading, you know, when you really don't understand how the program works. She wouldn't have gotten to keep the $300 off AFDC and her child support. No, absolutely not. So that even though she might have been eligible for AFDC, her child support then would have been paid to the state. So those are things.
Okay, I think my concern is either I'm not understanding you or you lost me somewhere because I'm not following that. She turned out receiving more money through welfare programs by quitting her job because no one would supplement what she already had going for her. And the state ended up, you know, giving her $1,000 a month versus $200 or whatever, state and federal government combined. And I'm wondering if you see any way around this.
Well, okay, perhaps I was hearing another. That particular thing might have been as a result of AFDC. AFDC is a program which can supplement a working mother's income. It isn't a program that has to be paid only, you know, to non-working individuals. There's a budget that's worked out in great detail in the department that shows what she's actually earning as against what the allocated amount is that AFDC will allow her. And for instance, supposing her allocation under AFDC would have been $300 a month, and she was earning $200. The AFDC program can be used to supplement, if you will, per income, only up to a certain maximum, however. And it may well be that that was one of those errors in that terribly high error rate that the department has, is that either she didn't apply for the proper program or no one helped her apply for that program, or you see there was just a foul up in the way they computed her budget and that sort of thing. We find over and over and over again, Representative Smith, that individuals need a personal advocate to take them to the Department of Health and Social Services to help them to get the benefits that are there and available to them. And it may be that's exactly what happened to that lady, is that she didn't have a personal advocate
right.
who helped take her through the labyrinth of all the systems.
Right. One more. You mentioned that, well, by figures it worked out to over half of the Title X monies available, Title 20, I'm sorry, Title 10 was another program I used to work, came to the, to administrative staffing?
So last year, it was approximately, originally, it was approximately a third of the total $4 million had been allocated for administrative costs. We objected to that,
yes.
And as a result, there were some subsequent changes made in the Title 20 application. Yes. Now, this year, I'm delighted to show you, and I think the reason the budget, I didn't see that. I didn't see those cost allocations.
Good, thank you.
Yeah. But as I say, without longer look, there may be some there, because I said we couldn't quickly find the other 600,000, but just the straight, clear, short VRUs here, I didn't see them.
Thank you very much.
We've heard a lot, not only here, but in our meetings every morning in Juneau, although we have not talked to anyone in the department yet. We've heard a great deal of a lot of problems, and particularly one of the problems we've had, as I've said before, is on data. At this point, I feel very strongly that the department is seriously negligent in not giving us the information we need to make good decisions. And I'm wondering if you can see any reason from your experience. My attitude is that I just want this information. Of course, I don't know how complicated these programs are. I'm wondering if you can see any excuse for us not being supplied information on, particularly in terms of measures of service, where they say not available, continually, and tell us that it is, you know, these different measures of service of in social service budget. Can you see any reason why that isn't available?
Well, I think simply, you know, to be fair to the department, one thing you've already said yourself has to be kept in mind: the complexity of these programs is really tremendous. That I think we all have to keep in mind is that, you know, it's almost impossible sometimes to understand, for instance, like how one goes through the labyrinth of ADEPENDENT or dependent children. So perhaps that is a factor that is affected. I think perhaps it's something that needs to be considered is it's often hard to know what to ask for. And as to, you know, not available, I certainly can't answer that with the other department. But in our experience in the past, we have found, I think it needs to be said with the department, that sometimes when we get our communications squared away, things have improved. Sometimes it is a matter of we didn't know what to ask for or what to ask about. And then occasionally, I've seen instances where, you know, the complexity of the program perhaps makes them think they are giving you answers, but it's not in some sort of a language you can understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, perhaps those are factors that affect that kind of thing. Sometimes perhaps it's just a matter of you have to keep asking. I don't know, I don't think perhaps anybody maybe can answer that.
Well, we've been promised, you know, yearly that the next year we will have some sort of information, and we don't get it. Let's see if you had anything that came to mind that might be a reason why it's impossible in this budget, although all the other budgets do it, to give us the information we need in terms of measuring the service provided. It's dealing with millions of dollars, and we're getting all this money out and all the programs sound good, but we don't really know how much is actually being delivered in terms of services. And since we don't work in those programs, we're not sure that anything's getting done at all. And it's very easy for someone opposed to the programs in general or opposed to spending the money to say, well, how can you spend $3 million on this program or $60 million or $80 million or however much the total is without knowing anything about what you're getting? And yet I'm certainly reluctant to go into a child abuse program and say, I'm wiping this money out, because just the name of it stops me from doing it, or foster care program, for instance. But I don't, you know, I don't have any way of quantifying what I'm getting.
Perhaps something would be of help to you as a recommendation that we made last year. You heard referred to here the fact that there was a study done at the department. Actually, the legislature last year contracted with the Child Welfare League of America, the legislature, for a study of the services of the Division of Social Services. And the legislature received a report last year that was under study by the House Committees and the Finance Committee of the services and service effectiveness of various programs within the Division of Social Services. The Alaska chapter of the National Association of Social Workers recommended that the legislature retain on a more ongoing basis, as you do for oil and gas, that you retain on an ongoing basis the Child Welfare League of America to advise you in exactly that kind of capacity. That was a clear recommendation from our organization. Certainly, I think that would be well worth your considering again this year, since they have a national reputation as an organization who can do exactly the kind of thing that you're interested in doing. Their report is available and was presented to the legislature last year.
Are there any other questions? Okay, if there are none, I'd like to thank you and everyone else who's testified today for the information and the time that they've taken. Also, reaffirm that we will be sending the persons who have testified today and any other interested parties the short forms on the budget. We will send to you information contained in the Red Book. And there will be, if there is a need, and if it is made known to this subcommittee for another hearing of this sort, we certainly will give it high priority. I understand the problem with not having been able to go through the budgets. I feel that for my own sake, this meeting has been very worthwhile and I've learned a great deal. And another one, it seems to me at this time, another one might be very productive. We are, of course, under severe time constraints, so it may not be possible to return to Anchorage. But for sure, any information given to us, we will thoroughly research and look into. And if there are any problems, please contact us in Juneau.
I might just add, the Legislative Affairs Agency here has a direct telecopier line to Juneau that will save you any costs and certainly a lot of time. So if you do have something that you feel is necessary for our immediate attention, rush it to Legislative Affairs and they'll send it through to us that day.
If there are no further comments, this meeting is adjourned.